Welcome to Up Close and Personal. I'm Scott Sexsmith. Springtime in Canada usually means a couple of things. First off, many places still have snow. And secondly, the start of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs are upon us. And who better to talk about that and a few other things than Hockey Night in Canada's Ron McLean. Ron, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us today.
You know, Scott, not to bribe or seduce the host, but you had Lloyd Robertson on, right? Which was a fantastic interview. And you did the intro. And I thought, if I'm Lloyd Robertson, I'm thinking, good grief, this guy sounds better than I do. And Lloyd is as good as a sound there is. So yeah, it's funny to hear you. And that was such a nice chat. I remember, Scott, I was at one of my first TV awards. They were called the Geminis back in the day. And I was up for sportscaster. And of course, Brian Williams won it again. And as I must have looked crestfallen, I'm mortified to tell you this story, but I must have looked crestfallen that I didn't win the Gemini Award. And Lloyd Robertson, the great Lloyd Robertson, reached over and patted me on the shoulder and said, "It's going to be okay, Ron." I never forgot that. And from there on in, at any Canadian Screen Awards or Geminis, I made it a point to look brave in the face of defeat.
Yeah, Lloyd was an absolute thrill for me, and just a thrill to talk to, as of course you are today. Ron, lots I'd like to cover. Obviously, your career, the playoffs, and things like hometown hockey. But as you have said on many broadcasts, I know we're tight for time. So if we can, I'd like to start a number of years ago with a couple of days back in 2010 in Philadelphia when you were there covering the Stanley Cup Finals between the Flyers and the Blackhawks. It started during the broadcast on the Wednesday, an interview between you and the commissioner that some would say went a little south. But I think the real story happened the next day while you and Don Cherry were having lunch. Maybe we could start there and you could tell us what happened.
Okay, good. I was good because I had to almost save my own life after the interview with Bettman. But let's get to the story that happens, as you say. So Don was recording his Rock'em Sock'em video on cameras. It was an off day between games of the Stanley Cup, as you say. We went to the old Spectrum and Don did his thing. And then we repaired to the hotel we were staying in on the Delaware River. And there was only four of us in the restaurant, Don and myself and a couple from France. And the couple from France moved out onto the terrace at one point. And so now it's just Don Cherry and myself. About 15 minutes into lunch, the wife of the couple comes roaring back into the restaurant and says, "Help, help, there's a man drowning." And right away, I got up. I'm a sort of a sailor. I work on a sailboat all through the 1990s as the pit guy on a very competitive Lake Ontario sailing racing yacht. So I knew that you needed something to help you if you're going to take someone out of the water. And I grabbed a rope, these velvet ropes that are on the stanchions separating the salad bar from the restaurant proper. Right. I knew that velvet rope would be handy to try and throw to this person in the river, whoever it might be. I thought at first it was the husband of this French couple, but he had already gone down to the pier. It was really complicated to get down to the pier. You had to kind of traverse some interesting obstacles, and then you had to drop 12 feet off the pier itself down to the waterline, and you could kind of stand on a 2x12 that was based around the waterline and try to help this person in the water. And the gentleman from France was actually down to his underwear. He had taken off, he had been wearing a polo shirt, Ralph Lauren with the big horse on the chest. And I kept thinking, oh, good grief, I have the Queen's Plate coming up in 10 days and I'm not prepared. That's my first thought. Can you believe it? Anyway, I get down to the waterline to help this guy. He actually jumps in the water, the gentleman from France, and pushes the guy to the pier. The gentleman who's in the water is bound by duct tape and rope. So somebody had tried to kill him. And the French rescuer gets out of the water and runs away. He wants no part of this scene, thinking whoever tried to kill this guy is probably still around. And I'm now there with this velvet rope, and this guy's able to hold the velvet rope. And I'm not strong enough to pull him out of the water because he weighs with his downfill jacket. He had downfill on. Yeah. He weighs about 300 pounds. Anyway, the whole crazy rescue mission took a while. The benefit of the velvet rope was at one point I could pass it up the 12 feet to the top of the pier. When people arrived, they used that, and I was with my two arms able to grab the guy's left arm and pull him out onto this 2x12. And then eventually police arrived, and it was a crazy day. And I remember I inadvertently told the story to Jeff Merrick, my colleague on radio that day, because you're just making small talk in the playoffs. You've said big game 3,000 times. So I told him this anecdote. And then, of course, it became a bit of a cause célèbre in a good way. But yeah, what a scene that day. And wow. I get back to the restaurant. So Grapes watched the whole thing from the terrace of the restaurant. It would have been impossible, not to say, but it would have been a really tough set of hurdles for Don to navigate to get down to the waterline. And we sit back down and he says, well, you sure know how to screw up a good Dave Bolin story, because he was in the middle of a story about a hockey player named Dave Bolin. Funny.
Just quickly back to the previous night with Gary and that interview. Did it seem as awkward to you doing it as it would have to us watching it?
Well, you know, I'm of so many opinions on these. Yes, it was awkward because you always knew, honestly, Scott, when I would do the interviews, Frank Brown was public relations director, Bill Daly, who is the second in command. They had John Collins. They had a whole entourage, Gary Mahar. The NHL would come and basically like an armed guard surround me, and they would, with a BlackBerry or a smartphone, track the decibel levels. So they were always working with Gary to have him maintain, you know, the appearance of the man in charge,
right?
Which was so unfortunate because Gary is, you know, sharp as a tack, and you know, he's like me, his humor gets him in trouble and mine gets me in trouble. I think we're very, you know, we're two bantam roosters who I think are well-versed on the two topics. I mean, in the day, the argument was always the same. It was labor negotiations and it was players' rights versus owners,
right?
And who was going to get their cut of the pie. It was a good argument until that, you know, it ultimately went the way when the lockout had happened in 2006 and it kind of finished the legitimate argument. But yeah, it was awkward. And I remember Scott Moore, my boss, saying, you know, God, Ron, we're all going to be out of a job. And he was probably right because Rogers took the rights. But I felt, and I still do, you know, that for Gary, any question's fair game. He's so well-versed. Unfortunately, you know, to be fair, when you speak lawyer speak, it looks a bit off-putting. It looks a bit defensive or evasive, but it's the nature of his knowledge and his life's work that he knows he has to be really careful.
Yeah. Okay. We talked briefly about Don Cherry, and I don't want to dwell on the Coach's Corner issue, but I would be remiss, of course, if we didn't quickly cover it. The feature came to an end after, I think, 38 seasons. How hard was that situation for you and Don to go through?
Yeah, extremely hard. I think, in, you know, it would be Don's answer to know if he decided it's his time. You know, it certainly was a case of all we needed to do was apologize for the misstep and move on. And that didn't happen. So that was really hard for me. I was in the middle of doing hometown hockey in Welland on the Sunday when it was all going down. Really hard to have a face-to-face over a beer, you know, looked on. We need to, you know, do this to make it work. And that didn't happen. And, you know, I was boxed into a corner where I had to kind of do the apology on the Sunday. That was always the one regret I had, is that, you know, to sit home as Don would have and watch me apologize on our behalf. I've had to apologize for fellow broadcasters in the past, and I never like it. I don't think it's chivalrous. I don't think it's right to be the spokesperson for another's mistake. I had made my own by not calling Don out in the short moment that maybe I could have. But yeah, that was the one clumsy part of the day. And then after that, I think Don made a decision and then I had to live with it. You know, that's, you know, I was so comfortable with the principle of the argument, Scott, that, you know, we had made a mistake. You cannot project an attitude on immigrants. However harmless it may have seemed, it absolutely was wrong. And to carry on was hard because it meant I had to then say, okay, well, are you going to be the courage of your convictions and stand on the principle that you believe in and keep working? Or are you going to fall on your sword and just go away as kind of, you know, there goes Batman and Robin. It was fun. And they'll be loved for life, even if they're recognized as having made a mistake. I couldn't live with sort of condoning that mistake. It was very important to carry on and sort of try and fight for my principles.
Yeah. And I guess the follow-up would be, is there love for life? How's the relationship or is there one
for
today?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Don, you know, we talk and we share season tickets. We'll get into all, you know, it's not easy to, I don't want to poke at the issue, you know, no. So I kind of keep a distance a little bit. But yeah, I mean, how could you, we were technically together 33 years, Scott, and we were as opposite as day as long. But that was the joy, right? You know, it was, we would sit, he would sit after the playoff game and want to watch Donald Trump on Fox News. And I was rolling my eyes, and he vice versa. When I was reading my, you know, those books I read, he would say,
right.
So, but that made for, I liked in a way that we were opposites because, you know, that's where we're at in our world, is trying to everything. People think it's all politics, this polarization of the world, but it's not, it's actually, groups finding social identity, finding your own identity, you know, as maybe even a citizen journalist, you know, doing your research, doing your own thinking for yourself, and finding like-minded, you know, we're all packing, we're all finding ways to get into a group that makes us feel good. And that's what's divisive. You know, until we can sort of break down this propensity to want to be with like-minded folk, we're going to have issues that are hard to resolve. And I'm sure that's time immemorial, that conundrum. But in the case of Don and me, as much as I like to think we were differences and it was good to shine a light as the two of us, we're still two white guys, you know, with our own history that's very similar. We were by far, you know, no means the panacea.
Ron, you come from a military family, as both your parents served the country in the RCAF. At any point, did you ever consider military as a career path for yourself?
No, I you know what shaped me because of my military upbringing was teachers. I was an only child, Scott, so I had no siblings. I really relied every time we hit a new base, I had to establish a new circle of friends. You know, I was constantly uprooting and feeling untethered. And then the base would be my first sanctuary. So there again is that groupthink. But it was very important to have that. What really shone for me was the role of educators. My father worked shift work. My mother would take part-time jobs. I really benefited from the relationships I would have with teachers. So that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to share with someone else up and coming what they had done with me.
Right. Red Deer is home. Your broadcast career, I believe, started at CKRD FM radio. Then you flipped to the TV side. Any reason why TV over radio, or did it just happen that way?
No. And it was really interesting to hear your Lloyd Robertson interview, because he worked for a repeater station in Stratford. So CBC would have these stations that ran CBC programming, and they would always at the top of the clock say, let's pause for station identification. Now, to a younger viewer, they're wondering, what the hell are we talking about here? But believe it or not, the station would then intercept the national feed. They'd have a kid in Red Deer, Alberta, flip a lever, press a button that would play a cartridge, a tape, and that tape would say, this is CKRD, 99.9 megahertz in Red Deer, Alberta, and then flip the lever to rejoin the CBC national network. That's what Lloyd Robertson did, and that's what I did.
Wow.
Eventually, they got me to do some news, just like Lloyd was invited to do some news on that station he was working. And then they asked me to be a DJ on the AM side. I was still in grade 11, doing a six-hour shift on the overnight on weekends, spinning records and scared skinny and not knowing what I was doing. But that's where I got the bug that separated me from this desire to be a teacher. Because I found in radio, you were also making someone's day. The way those teachers had made my life, I always felt that first break in the morning at 6 a.m. where, hey, good morning, it's going to be 35 degrees and nothing but blue skies today. And here's a number one song in the country.
Yeah.
Have a great day. You know, and I thought, oh, that's a nice vocation. I'd like to do that.
Yeah. It's all about connection, right?
So, and I didn't answer, Scott, the TV part. I moved my way up in radio when you were the noon to four disc jockey in Red Deer. Automatically, you were the TV weather person. They would take whoever was on noon to four radio and then slot them in at six in the evening to do the weather. So I would go at 5 o'clock, and with my map of Canada, I would phone Environment Canada and Lloyd and Nick and all the gents that would help me put the L's and the H's, the lows and the highs,
right,
the troughs of warm air aloft, the cold fronts. They would teach me how to draw the map and how to regurgitate the information, and I really enjoyed that. And that was, so it was all happenstance. I just did the weather, and because I did the weather in Red Deer, we had really shoddy equipment, so the poor news anchor would throw to a clip, it wouldn't run. The sports director would throw to a clip, it wouldn't run. So that meant the weather, when they came to me, I had like 12 minutes to fill, and I certainly didn't have 12 minutes of weather up my sleeve. So I would start to forecast sports events. I would forecast the Flames or the Oilers games or the Eskimos or Elks or the Stampeders.
Right.
And that's when Don Shannon of Hockey Night in Canada saw me dance and thought, I'm going to invite that kid to audition for the host of the Flames position. And that's how it happened.
And that's a great segue to my next question. You've been the host now of Hockey Night in Canada since, I believe, 1986, with the exception of a couple of seasons. Do you remember the day that you got the call, you got the nod to host the show, and what that was like?
Well, it was, first of all, John Shannon telling me to phone a gentleman named Don Wallace in Toronto and said, make sure you let him know that you would like to work in Toronto, you know, because you've got to be squeaky wheel gets the oil run. And so Dave Hodge had moved over to Vancouver. This is the 86-87 season. He's accepted a job with CKNW radio, and he wants to work Vancouver games when there are home games at the Pacific Coliseum.
Right.
So what they're really looking for is a chap to work about 10 Saturday nights at Maple Leaf Gardens. And it could have been Brian Williams, Brian McFarland, could have been anybody. But luckily, a guy named Jim Huff, who was within our producer's system, he said to Don Wallace, you know what? You hired Dave Hodge when he was 26. You're looking for some fresh blood in the mix. It's only 10 Maple Leaf Gardens games. Why don't you give the kid out in Calgary, Ron, a chance? And they did. That's how I kind of got in the door. And then ultimately that year, Dave stepped away in a very famous falling out over the lack of overtime coverage and a Breyer kerfuffle.
Yeah.
And I just fell into the role. Everything, Scott, every step, you know, you just have to say a little bit of serendipity, but along with that, you know, I was clearly in the crosshairs of disdain for replacing Dave Hodge under the circumstances I did. And I had to endure the, you know, late part of my career for Don Cherry. You know, it doesn't come like a complete bed of roses. Let's put it that way.
After all these years, Ron, do you still pinch yourself that you hold what some would say is the most coveted broadcast position in the country?
Yes. I love the, you know, when I think of Dick Irvin and I, hopefully we'll do a tribute to Guy Lafleur this weekend. When I think of, you know, my idols were all the people on Hockey Night in Canada. Of course, we were so simple in our time, Scott. Two networks, CTV and CBC, and they both ran Hockey Night in Canada. CTV had a Wednesday night version. And I was an only child who lived with the television. So I would set up my bedroom around. I had a lucky TV. We had a color TV, not a big one, 19 inch in the front room, but I had a little 12 inch black and white in my bedroom, and the Leafs would win if I watched that one. They would not if I watched the color TV. That's just the way it was. So I would watch the game with my red nibs and my Slurpee and my sunflower seeds, but more than the game, I needed to hear Dave Hodge or Dick Irvin or Ward Cornell tee up the game. And that applied to all sports. I was inadvertently training for the career, all the while thinking, you know, nothing of broadcasting, but hooked on broadcasting. So yeah, you kind of pinch yourself. Having said that, you know, I always go back to, I was as content in Red Deer as I was in Calgary as I am doing the Canadian show. So that little perspective, you and I are doing the same craft, and the joy we take from it, the talent gets the same kick regardless of the number of viewers.
Yeah, for sure. We always hear, Ron, about a player's game day routine where they get to the rink 3 or 4 hours, you know, prior to puck drop and have a coffee and tape their sticks and stretch out, that kind of stuff. Yeah. What is a typical game day on a Saturday like for Ron McLean?
Well, it's a week-long build-up for sure. You know, as soon as I finish the show on one Saturday, I check the following Saturday's matchups, and I target what nights I'll have to watch the games of the teams involved. And I begin to research the day in history. I begin to look for muses, whether it's literature or music, to, you know, imbue the work that I'll do. The day of the show itself, by now I've got a lot kind of already organized. So it's a matter of going through all the blogs that apply to the teams that are on that night, because they're a little usually insider information. I check with 32 Thoughts, Elliot and Jeff. I check with just myriad sources to be prepared and, I firmly believe, you know, you've got to be attentive and in the moment. And it's just any minute that out of thin air, the idea you really need appears. So you're just trying to, plus you need to do a little bit of either exercise, like a walk or a bike ride or a swim, to kind of get the blood flowing. And, you know, but there's no real set ritual in terms of what a player's superstitions would be, but prep, endless prep. You know, right. When I started in the business, Scott, Wayne Barry was my mentor. His real name was Wayne Heinrich. But he said, Ron, 10 hours of prep for every hour on the air. And I thought, you got to be kidding. But it was kind of true, and I hold to it to this day.
I'm not sure what your contract status is, but if it were up to you, would you continue to host the show for as long as you were able to?
No, I do see succession as important. You know, I was kind of happy when George took over. I was willing to move from the way I kind of analogize it, from the first line to the fourth line. I was still doing Coach's Corner, which was a pretty watched segment of the show, but it's all epic. And then I would do the hometown hockey, which I adore. I was a child of Wide World of Sports, and I could go on about that. But with Hockey Night, there's 4 years left on the Rogers deal, Scott, so it kind of stands to reason. I'm 62, just turned 62. If I could make it to the end of that deal, I would be happy with that. And, but I'm never been a goal setter, and I'm certainly not a clinger on her. I don't try not to be attached to, you know, I think the big battle in life is to cope with impermanence in our health, in our careers. And, you know, we don't deal with it that well, but I've shaped my whole life because of being an only child and being uprooted over and again. I've taught myself or tried to teach myself to accept change and be cool with change and know that sometimes that change is pennies from heaven, could actually be for the best. So if one day they come in and say, Ron, you know, we'd like to get some young blood on the chair, in the chairs, say, great.
Through the Rogers deal, Rogers launched Hometown Hockey, I believe back in 2014, 2015, featuring you and Tara traveling all corners of this great country, profiling communities and hockey at the grassroots level. Another season has just wrapped up. What has that experience been like for you, especially this season, having to pivot as often as you guys did with COVID?
Yeah, so unfortunate. You know, the real perk of the show became, by about year two, we figured out to have all the minor hockey kids invited to come into what we call the Parade of Champions, and they would fill the bowl outside of our mobile studio. And honestly, Scott, that was, you know, when the show found its footing. Now, we can't do that during the pandemic. It's conceivable, the last show at North Vancouver, where we had a few of the kids, that's as good as it was going to be for this particular eighth year. But the show itself is great in so many respects. It makes the NHL a firsthand experience for, you know, like North Vancouver is the home of Connor Bedard. He's the next one.
Right.
He's the new Connor McDavid. And this happens everywhere you go. You go down to Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, and you think, really? Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon are from this town, same town, little town outside Halifax. Yeah. And that's Canada, of course. These stories are there everywhere. And when you go with our show, you bump into the 50-50 ticket seller, the Zamboni driver, the coach, everybody that is the backbone of the game, both on the, especially on the female side right now, it's exploding. And it's just so happy an experience. So yeah, it's been a great, that's why when Rogers took over and they were going towards distribution television versus destination television, it used to be you had to set your whole thing around coaches' corners at 7:45 or whatever it may be. But then they thought, hey, we can show five games in a night. You can find one on City, one on Sportsnet 1, one on CBC. So they needed a ringleader more than they needed an entertainer. And now we've tried to find a mix somewhere in between. But, you know, having said that, I always go back to poor Strombo. He came in order to facilitate that new age thinking, but without ever giving the gift of what he the opportunity, because it was five games and so little time. And we all get into that same box on a Saturday night now. It's just, we're racing around trying to tell 10 stories. Not easy.
Yeah, of course. Okay, the playoffs are here. Obviously, Florida, Tampa, Colorado, all well poised. And here in Canada, Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, looking good. Is this the year for the Leafs? Is the drought going to end? What are you seeing from your perspective?
Well, you know, we did this not long after a pretty tough loss for Toronto against Tampa, and those things linger. They've got demons to slay. They remind me of the Vancouver Canucks back in the day when they couldn't beat Chicago. Obviously, Toronto's bugaboo had been the Boston Bruins, but the two-time Stanley Cup champs are a challenge. The whole Atlantic, the East, it's just the New York Rangers are such a dark horse with that goaltender, Shesterkin.
Yeah,
I can't say that it is the year. I just, you know, when they're clicking, they're a fine hockey team, but they're in good company for that title in the East. And over on the other side, the Battle of Alberta, those two teams are very intriguing, because I think Calgary's rugged game will be a lot for Colorado to cope with, and Edmonton's skill. If they, I just saw a glint in the eye of Duncan Keith with Mike Smith, two, you know, long in the tooth guys who know how to win. That magic could be the leadership they need. To be, you know, when you have Connor McDavid, it's like Messier used to say of Gretzky, it's kind of a matter of time. And I wouldn't bet against Edmonton this spring.
Absolutely. Ron, are you in studio in Toronto for the entire run, or will you travel for the broadcast as it gets closer to the finals? How does that work?
We will go, Scott, right at the end. You know, until then, it just feels like we're favoring one side or the other if we're moving with one series. So, yeah, the Stanley Cup final will be the first time we hit the road.
Great stuff. There's nothing like the arrival of spring and, of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs in Canada. And when you think of Canada, a few things come to mind. Tim Hortons, politeness, and Saturday nights in our living rooms with Ron McLean. Ron, this has been absolutely terrific. Have a great playoff run, and thanks for doing this today.
Total pleasure, Scott. Yeah, see you on the trail.
Thanks for watching Up Close and Personal for Village Media. I'm Scott Sexsmith.